Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future deco, modern, retro, and other related events. Also the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era.
Deco Retro. Deco Retro.
Good afternoon, listeners. I'm Philippa, and on the program today, we take a look at a now vanished world, the rise and decline of Chinese laundries in Aotearoa, New Zealand. In the late 19th century, household laundry was a major task. It involved strenuous work. Also, the frills and flounces of blouses and dresses required detailed ironing. Tablecloths, napkins, aprons and shirts, collars and cuffs demanded meticulous starching and ironing. Those Europeans who could afford servants left the laundry work to them, or to a Chinese laundry for the detailed hand starching, a task at which the Chinese excelled. The rise of Chinese laundries around the world would have been a boon to many households, especially those with large families. Joining us on the program today is Dr. Joanna Boileau, a freelance historian and member of the Professional Historians Association of New Zealand, Aotearoa. Joanna studied archaeology and anthropology at the University of Auckland and has worked in museums in New Zealand and Australia, including Auckland War Memorial Museum, the Powerhouse Museum in Sydney, and Queensland Museum in Brisbane. In 2009, she completed a postgraduate diploma in local, family and applied history at the University of New England in Armidale, New South Wales. In December 2014, the Chinese Poll Tax Heritage Trust commissioned her to research and write a book about the history of Chinese laundries in New Zealand. Joanna is now based in Auckland, but I believe she travelled the length and breadth of New Zealand in her quest to meticulously research her comprehensive book, Starch Work by Experts, Chinese Laundries in Aotearoa, New Zealand, published in 2019. Welcome, Joanna.
Oh, thank you, Philippa, for inviting me on the program.
Now, what sparked your interest in the history of the Chinese in Australia and New Zealand, and actually, how long did it take you to research and write the book?
I first became interested in the history of the Chinese when I was living in northern New South Wales in Australia, where I was working for the local historical society and the local museum. And I ended up writing a small book about the Chinese in the local area, called Families of Fortune. And when I came to New Zealand, I did a thesis on Chinese market gardening in Australia and New Zealand. And after that, I was contacted by the Chinese Poll Tax Heritage Trust to ask me if I was interested in researching writing a book on Chinese laundries, which was a very good follow-on from the research I'd already been doing onto Chinese market gardening. So I embarked on that research, which took 4.5, almost 5 years by the time it actually came to publication, because what I found was there were many, many more laundries than I expected around the country. And I also did a lot of oral history interviews with the sons and daughters of Chinese laundry people around
that
the country.
That would have been really interesting, because, I mean, it is some book, and obviously it was quite a mammoth task that you undertook.
It did grow and grow.
Yes. Now, in the 19th century, there was a major diaspora around the globe, of which the Chinese formed only a small part. Can you tell me about the history behind Chinese emigration at that time?
Well, from the mid 19th century, particularly in southern China, there were a lot of social problems with banditry. There was overpopulation. There was also things like drought and floods and famine. So there were a lot of problems going on in southern China at that time, which was a real push factor for the young men. Often it was mainly young men in families to go overseas to seek their fortunes and to send money back to support their families back in China. And the other major pull factor attracting those young men to travel overseas was the discovery of gold in California, in Australia, and then in New Zealand by the 1860s.
Mm. And now most of the Chinese men who came to New Zealand were from, how do you pronounce it, Guangzhou?
Guangdong.
Guangdong, in a certain part of China, one part of near Canton or something.
That's right.
Or in Canton.
That's right. Canton, which is now called Guangzhou, is the capital of Guangdong Province.
Yes.
Which is then divided into quite a lot of different counties.
Yes.
Lot of the Chinese in New Zealand came from those southern counties around the major city of Guangzhou.
Of farming stock?
They were mainly farmers, that's right, yeah.
Oh. And now, when the gold rush was over, did many return to their families in China? And what happened to the men who stayed here? How did they earn a living?
Okay, a lot of the Chinese did return after the gold ran out back to their country, but a lot also did stay in New Zealand. They found work working on European farms, working on the railways, which in the 1880s were being constructed, particularly the main south line and down the South Island. They also went into market gardening, opened fruit shops, small groceries, and also a bit later on, they also opened laundries.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because what made them decide to open Chinese laundries?
Well, that's quite an interesting question because laundry work traditionally was women's work in China. And most of these immigrants in New Zealand were men. Laundries were something that could be started with very little capital. All you needed is some hot water and a scrubbing brush and maybe a potbelly stove to help dry the clothes. And you could rent a small shop quite at low rent.
I was just going to say language wouldn't have been a problem if you were opening a laundry or doing market gardening. Fluency.
You would need basic communication to do business about, how many shirts you wanted washed and when they would be ready and what the cost was. You did need a basic English.
Basic English, yes.
Yeah. And the other thing was that laundry work was an occupation that was fairly low in the social scale, so they didn't find a lot of competition from Europeans in that particular job.
Well, that's not surprising, really. I was going to ask you, how large was the Chinese population in New Zealand in the early days in 1881? And how did some of the immigration restrictions affect the Chinese community at that time?
Well, there were around 5,000 Chinese in New Zealand in 1881, which was a fairly small percentage of the total population, around 1%. But at the same time, the Chinese were fairly visible in a predominantly white European society. And at the same time, there was very strong anti-Chinese sentiment in countries throughout the British Empire.
What brought that about? Was it sort of this theory of the yellow peril or something.
That's right. Yeah. And it was very much part of this idea of establishing British civilization in countries around the world.
Yes.
For example, Australia, Canada, New Zealand. All the governments got together to work out how to discuss the Chinese problem.
Now, is this where the poll tax came
in? That's right. Hmm. They discussed ways of restricting Chinese immigration because they were very concerned about keeping their countries white.
Hmm.
So initially, the poll tax that was introduced in New Zealand was £10 in 1881, and then in 1896, it was increased to £100 per person. And this was only Chinese.
Oh, that's enormous, isn't it?
Well, an equivalent to today's money is probably about $19,000.
Good Lord.
So you can see that people arrived with a very large debt to pay off to family members or to other merchants in the Chinese community who may have sponsored them and paid the poll tax. So they had to work for quite a few years.
It would take years, for that amount of money.
Mm.
Gosh. Well, this brings us now to talk about the racism in the 1900s. And in your book, you show some of the anti-Chinese posters. Can you tell us about some of them and the racism itself?
Well, one cartoon in the book illustrates irate customers outside a Chinese laundry throwing a bottle through the window. And this was in Molesworth Street in Wellington, after the owner refused them to give their laundry back because they didn't have a ticket. And you often find this in early newspaper accounts.
Yes.
It was very important that you kept your ticket in order to reclaim your laundry when it was ready. And larrikinism, so-called, was quite a problem in that early period in the early 20th century. Mainly young men who may be underemployed, didn't have much to do. So they would target not just Chinese, but also older people.
Yes.
And you get a lot of incidents reported in early newspapers of larrikins throwing stones through windows, stealing fruit and vegetables from Chinese fruit stores or from Chinese market gardens. A lot of it was petty vandalism.
Yes.
And there's a lot of structural racism as well, which really limited the range of occupations that Chinese could go into.
Yes, I suppose in a way they were forced to remain within their own community for support and, you know.
Well, that's right. But at the same time, they were dealing with European customers every day.
Hmm.
Buying fruit and vegetables, taking their shirts and collars to the Chinese laundry. So there were social interactions going on. And you do get a fairly slanted view, I guess, when you read newspaper accounts because it's always the incidents that are reported.
Oh, blown up.
Larrikinism,
yes.
Like the day-to-day transactions that go ahead quite easily.
Yeah, you know? Typical newspapers.
So you need to try and get a bit of balance.
Yes.
When you're writing a book like this.
That, yes.
Yeah.
Now, in spite of the racism, the Chinese were apparently a very philanthropic community. Is that so?
Well, that's right. There are a lot of records in early newspapers of the local Chinese community making donations to local hospitals.
Oh, yes.
And also during the First World War and Second World War to patriotic funds, to the Red Cross. So they were very community-spirited.
Yes. Okay, that's interesting. Now, in your book, you give a very amusing account of a laundry owner, Wing Lee, who attended a poster ball in Wellington in 1911. Can you tell us about that?
Well, Wing Lee was an early laundryman in Wellington, and he opened a laundry in Molesworth Street in 1896. And in 1911, he attended a charity poster ball in Wellington Town Hall, and it was in aid of the Society for the Promotion of the Health of Women and Children, which later became the Plunkett Society, which is very well known throughout New Zealand. So this was a fundraiser. And Wing Lee actually dressed as a Chinese laundry. He had a shelf there on a cord around his neck, yes, with all his shirts and collars and things. And his costume really stood out, and he was actually awarded the prize for the most original poster.
I think that's hilarious. I can just imagine the reaction of some of those matrons.
I found a quote in a local newspaper, yes, at the time, which described, every now and again, the Chinese laundry would come trundling around along the hall, its occupant uttering weird cries, touting for custom, and now and then shedding garments from his counter onto the floor.
Yes, that's in the book, yeah. Now, Joanna, apart from Auckland and Wellington, where else were the major Chinese laundries established? Who were their main customers? And apart from it obviously being very hard work, what were the working conditions like in those laundries?
So I actually found laundries in most small towns around the country, actually, from Bluff in the far south up to Hikarangi, which is just north of Whangarei.
Really? So they were spread right across the country?
You know, there might have been only one or two laundries at a time in the smaller places. The majority of laundries were in the major centres, so Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, Dunedin.
Well, I was going to say, where did they like to have their laundries?
Well, in the cities, yeah, they were mainly in the centre of the cities, city centres, easily accessible to their customers. So they were in small rented houses, and they often changed locations. And they needed to be right where their customers were, where their customers could drop off their laundry on their way to work or on the way home in the evening.
Yes.
So it's very much by word of mouth, their custom.
And actually, the working conditions must have been quite difficult, because apparently they lived in the laundries with their families, or actually it would have just been the men in those days.
Well, in the early days, they were mainly men. It might be one or two partners in a laundry who might have come from the same village or nearby villages in China, the same county, and they worked together in the laundry. And to save money, obviously, they slept in the laundry as well. And the layout of laundries was actually very similar. There was a very small area at the beginning where the customers came and left their laundry. They had an area where they did the ironing and the folding of the garments. Then they had a room that was often doubled as a living room or a kitchen as well, with a potbelly stove. Because the weather was so changeable in New Zealand, they needed an inside area to dry
the clothes.
Then the laundry area, the washing area, was usually right out at the back at a lean-to and a small yard, because if it was an inner city dwelling, it was quite long and narrow with not much outside area. That's where the laundry would be hung on good days.
It must have been hot work.
Very hot and steamy. Yeah, and running back and forwards from the potbelly stove to the ironing board.
Yes. Actually, what made you choose starch work by experts as the title of your book?
What I discovered was that it was quite different from the stereotype of Chinese laundries as a very menial, low-status occupation. It was actually a very specialised job. When I started talking to sons and daughters who grew up in Chinese laundries, it was a very specialised process involving individual treatment of collars and shirts.
Well, the clothes were very formal in those days.
That's right. Yes. And particularly men's fashions didn't change for over 50 years very much at all. And starched collars and starched shirts were very much their day, everyday wear, for all range of people, from doctors and dentists and lawyers and so on.
And also Masonic regalia.
That's right. Freemasons are very big customers of Chinese laundries as well.
Yes.
No.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? Such a wide variety
of people. And even greengrocers and shop owners, had starched aprons.
Yes.
And the hospitals, the nurses had their starched veils and uniforms.
Yes.
Because not all hospitals had their own laundries.
No.
So there were the large mechanised European steam laundries started up from the 1890s, but they tended to leave the specialised starch work and the hand work to the Chinese laundry. So it was a niche that they managed to occupy for several decades. Yeah,
it would be very intricate work doing the ironing of some of those clothes.
Yeah.
Now, having reached their peak in the late 1920s, how did the world events that followed affect the laundrymen, and what factors contributed to the demise of Chinese laundries in New Zealand? Well, by about the 1970s, I suppose.
Well, they began to decline from the 1960s, really. The major events that affected Chinese people in New Zealand were the Sino-Japanese War, when the Japanese invaded China. And by 1937, 1938, the Japanese were advancing on the home villages of Chinese men in New Zealand. They petitioned the government, New Zealand government, successfully to allow their wives and children to come to New Zealand as refugees. And that really rejuvenated the whole Chinese community in New Zealand.
That was a good thing, a really good thing to happen.
So a lot of single men were reunited with their families.
Wonderful.
And they were able to build up family businesses as fruit shops, laundries, and market gardens as well.
Yes.
But also after the war in New Zealand, there were a lot of social changes that combined to spell the end for Chinese laundries, really. Firstly, there were the rapid suburbanisation. So you had your quarter acre section with your washing line and your laundry. Electric home appliances were cheap and readily available, like washing machines.
Yes.
Coin operated laundries started opening, where you could just go and do your own laundry. And also fashions changed. There are a lot of non-iron fabrics.
Yes. Oh, okay. The introduction of synthetics.
Yeah. Synthetic fabrics, that's right. And starch collars basically went out of fashion, apart from really formal wear. So the whole fashion was a lot more informal than it had been.
And another factor must have been the fact that more women were going out to work, perhaps?
Yes.
And not doing those sort of tasks?
Well, more and more women were going out to work. Yeah.
So big social changes. And I think there'd still be people even today who can remember some of those laundries.
Yeah, and another thing that started up too were the chains of dry cleaning cleaners.
Yes.
I found a few Chinese laundry families who went into dry cleaning and were quite successful at that. Yeah.
Well, yes, very resilient.
Yes.
Very resilient community.
They were, yeah.
Well, we're just about out of time, Joanna, but I'm just going to say Chinese laundries in Aotearoa, New Zealand, are now part of a vanished world. So your book, it is an important record of those early Chinese immigrants, and whose skill, their hard work and resourcefulness made a significant contribution to the social fabric of New Zealand. So thank you again, Joanna. I haven't thanked you, have I? Thank you anyway, Joanna. It's been very interesting and thought-provoking, and an important insight into New Zealand's past. But I think I must ask you, where can people obtain your book, Starch Work by Experts, Chinese Laundries in Aotearoa, New Zealand, by Dr. Joanna Boileau?
Oh, thanks, Philippa. Starch Work by Experts is being marketed through the Chinese Pultex Heritage Trust.
Yes.
And is actually part of a series of books on Chinese history in New Zealand. So last year they published one on Chinese fruit shops, and there's a few other books that will be published in the next couple of years too. Starch Work by Experts, you can contact Connie Kum. I'll give you her email address. It's kojay at extra.co.nz. That's kojay at xtra.co.nz. And I'll also give you a phone number, 021-115-0689, and it retails for $49.95. And for Auckland listeners, the Arcadia Bookshop in Newmarket also has a few copies for sale.
Oh.
Thank you.
Well, it certainly is an amazing book. There's a lot to read in that book, and also very interesting photography of all these different Chinese laundries around the world.
Well, I did a lot of research just on the photographs, actually. I wanted to have a book with plenty of images because they really add to the text itself.
Oh, absolutely.
As they say, a picture tells a thousand words. So I managed to find photographs of some of the original buildings where laundries were located, and also family photos of the laundry families.
Mm.
Yeah.
Ah. Well, thank you. Thank you once again. And we'll fade out today with a recording of violinist Vanessa May playing a piece called Warm Air.
Program today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/deco-retro. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Club Moderne, Art Deco Society Auckland. We will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Moderne. For more information, email judith.moore650@gmail.com. That's judith.moore650@gmail.com. Bye for now.